And now, Forward with Falk. Join Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen as they navigate their way through the political thicket. Dave, as we speak right now, we're about in the 98th day of Trump's 100 first days in office. And, you know, since Franklin Roosevelt made a big deal about his first 100 days, and he really had 100 days that was something to talk about because he produced a million new jobs at the start of his term in the midst of a period of horrible joblessness, the Great Depression, and set in motion a real change in the form and nature of the U.S. government. Every other presidency has said, well, my 100 days will be also fantastic. So 100 days has become a kind of a symbol of what's happening in the first 100 days. So what do you think has happened in the first 100 days of Trump's second term?
Well, it just seems like an eternity, right?
Yeah.
It's fast moving, but this was predictable. Remember that leading up to this, they had several years of working on this project 2025, and they had outlined everything that they needed to do in order to carry out, we'll call it the Trump agenda, but really it's the Project 2025 agenda of placing people in certain positions and going after things very fast and furiously, so to speak.
And they also vetted the people who were going to do it. They had a whole list of people to appoint. Yeah.
Right. And then it was a combination of things. Also, Steve Bannon's idea of flooding the zone. They had Kevin Roth in place, the ideologue behind this, who's now at OMB
Russell Voigt.
Yeah. And these folks, they were gung-ho. The one thing that was not contemplated by Project 2025, at least when it was done, was the role of Elon Musk. Musk kind of appeared in the middle of the campaign and then bought his way into the presidency, so to speak.
Actually, that was a great success of Stephen Miller. He's the guy who did that. And Stephen Miller's wife is Elon Musk's publicity director.
Yeah, and then they had they sort of also had the back channel through J.D. Vance to what's his name?
Peter Thiel.
Peter Thiel.
Right.
Working on this as well. So they had the only thing was trying to coordinate it. What of course happened is that what we've seen is that the people in charge of doing this were, as someone I saw on television described, the C team. And so they've kind of bumbled their way in and through this thing. People like Peter Hegseth, who is showing that, he got rid of the blacks and the women in power because he said they were DEI hires. What you need is more incompetent white Christian males. And he's showing what that result is. So it's a mixed, certainly a mixed bag. And it's why people were shocked that he's doing this so fast is beyond me, because that's what Project 2025 contemplated doing and how to do it. The thing is, there's starting to be a more focused resistance, that people are getting over the shock and starting to try to figure out what to do. There's been a number of court cases that have certainly slowed things down.
There are, in fact, 150 court cases at the moment. 150.
And the at least at the district level, the base level, the judges are pretty much holding to the Constitution. We shouldn't be shocked by that. That's what they're supposed to do. These are judges across the board. They're not all Biden judges or Obama judges. They're George Bush judges. They're Trump judges.
They're Ronald Reagan judges.
Reagan judges. I was just going to get to that.
Yeah.
The appellate judge, one of those cases, was a Reagan appointee who was scathing in his remarks about what's going on in certain areas. It's difficult, though, to keep all the lawsuits straight. Which one is with which judge and trying to make which point on this? But we've had that. But the simple fact is, the judiciary right now is just simply a holding action. And nothing is going to be really fully accomplished until Congress starts acting like the first branch of government that it's supposed to be.
But why will that ever happen?
It can only happen if the Democrats win win in 2026.
Yeah.
They have a good shot at the House, the Senate not so much. But you know, things keep going as bad as they are in terms of the economy and people seeing the results. Then there could be some upsets in the Senate races. Right now, the Republicans still feel that they're on the offense, but they're going to be playing defense pretty quickly. A lot of the economists say within the next 30 days, when the supply chain breaks down due to the tariffs, Trump is out there bragging. Since I've done this, I've made 200 deals. Someone pointed out there's only 195 countries in the world. But he's made 200 deals, and when he was asked, "Well, what are these deals?" he never says what they are because they don't exist.
Well, he hasn't negotiated even one of them.
No,
that's the truth. The truth is, he hasn't made one deal.
Right, he hasn't made one deal. He probably will make some, but he's already backed down from China. He's talked about, well, Xi has called me. We've had discussions, and the Chinese are saying, we don't know what he's talking about.
Right.
We haven't done that.
Right.
But that's something else that the.
But he has erased trillions of dollars in value from shareholders throughout the world.
The stock market
is down 10 points since he took office.
Yeah, I mean,
10%, not 10 points, 10%.
Yeah. I know what you meant there, but they're. It's sort of, for the moment, kind of bottomed out. It's up and down now, trying to establish some sort of a floor, but it's still pretty fragile. And we don't, anything, anything that could be said that could spook the markets, if he's tries to get rid of Jerome Powell again, you could lose even more. And the thing is, though,
How about this? He's not interested in growth. He's not interested. He doesn't care which way the market goes. He's interested in volatility, because in volatility, traders can make a fortune. Doesn't matter what happens as long as it moves.
Yeah.
In the great drop that Friday 3 weeks ago, when the market dropped so many points, so much percentage. In the wake of his announcement about the tariffs, if you had invested $100,000 at the peak, either way, at the bottom or at the top, and you had cleaned out your holding at the end of the day, 2 hours or 3 hours later, where he said it, now's the time to buy.
Right.
And he made the announcement. If you had entered the market at that point with $100,000 and closed out at 4 o'clock, you'd have walked away with a $20 million profit on $100,000. So maybe he doesn't care what's happening. Right. Maybe he just cares that it's trading.
Right. And of course, you've got congressmen doing the trading, Marjorie Taylor Greene.
That's right, Marjorie Taylor Greene, who did a huge amount of trading that day.
Yeah, but we shouldn't omit my congressman down here who kept talking about that Congress shouldn't be allowed to trade, and Rob Bresnahan, who's now kind of, well, I'll say it, he's running scared. There's that group of 12 supposed moderates who have said that they're not going to sign on to the budget deal that they're trying to push through. We'll see about that, because they still have to, you know, cut things. And we're now seeing what what's happening with FEMA. We've had some devastating storms.
FEMA's being wiped out, right? FEMA's being wiped out.
Yeah, we've had devastating storms. And Trump says, well, it's a state responsibility. So you're going to see all of the states, the governors, be talking about raising taxes in order to pay for things because the federal government isn't there. We've got the Medicaid issue coming back to the states. Remember, under Obamacare, the federal government pays 90%. And if that gets cut, a lot of these, even the red states that bought into the Medicaid, now, are they going to just bow out and say, we can't pay any more than our 10%? Or are they going to have to pony up more money and raise taxes or cut services? All of these things are, on the table, so to speak, and haven't fully played out yet.
But the cuts in the various agencies have made in services have wiped out pretty much everything that people expect the government should be doing for them. The AmeriCorps is wiped out.
Yeah.
The federal education budget is about to be wiped out. The museum's budgets are being wiped out.
I know that's true. That's near and dear to your heart, given your wife's profession.
Well, that's true, but it should be true, near and dear to anybody's heart. Look, he appointed some lawyer, 36-year-old white woman, to be in charge of removing ideology from the museums, and she's shutting down the African-American Museum. The first thing they did was shut down the exhibit that showed the lunch counter that was the site of the first sit-in. They've dismantled it and sent the actual lunch counter back to some place in California because that's a symbol of woke ideology.
Not civil rights.
No, not civil rights. Exactly. Woke ideology. Well,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that ideology that Thomas Jefferson said, all men are created equal. That wokeness.
Yeah, that one. That very one. That's exactly right.
Yeah.
They've cut medical research. You're not going to have a flu vaccine this year because the conference that was supposed to meet to decide which of the various strains they should concentrate on, they canceled that conference. And that's the conference that decides for the medical industry what they should do. So there's not going to be a flu vaccine for the coming strain because if they're not making it now, it's not going to be available in October.
Right. And they've cut back medical research on cancer. Right. They were taking away the permission to be in the green cards for people who are working on that sort of thing. Alzheimer's research, another area that they've decided to cut back on severely.
They've cut $400 million in medical research. They've cut not only projected grants, ongoing grants, stuff that has been worked on for years. They just stopped it.
You know, it's not that long ago that the Nobel Prize was awarded to two researchers at the University of Pennsylvania for their mRNA research, which led to the vaccine against COVID. They you know, and they're cutting the money out of those elite colleges. This is what the elite colleges are doing with the money that they get from the federal government. Most of this is on research. They say, well, what do we get for, why are we giving Harvard X amount of dollars? Because they get quality research out of that. Now, I'm not saying some of it may not be, there might be some waste, there might be some skimming off of that, but still, you're getting world-class research.
I don't think there's any waste, and I don't think there's any skimming. And if there would be, these guys are not the ones to know about it. They wouldn't be able to discover waste if it fell on the top of their head. If they fell in a cesspool, they wouldn't see the waste.
Meanwhile, what Elon Musk is doing is he's gathering information.
Commercially useful information.
Commercially useful information in people's social security numbers, their tax returns, all of this stuff that used to be closely held by the agencies. And people are either being fired for not giving it up or quitting because they won't give it up.
But the whole thing's a scam. He started out, he says he can save $2 trillion. Well, that was, of course, made up because there weren't $2 trillion dollars at all. So then he said, we're going to save $1 trillion. Okay. Then he said, no, we're going to save $150 billion. And here's what we've done. And people who looked at the list said, well, wait a minute. Most of this stuff, you didn't save at all. A lot of it either has already been spent or it was already scheduled to be cut. But all right, $150 billion. Then somebody said, well, you know, what does it cost to do these things? When you fire these people, you're paying them for 3 or 4 months out. It turns out it costs more than $150 billion to fire the people that he's firing than the $150 billion that he's saving.
Pay the unemployment comp.
Unemployment comp. Forget all that. I mean, It's the excuse that they're doing this to save money. If you look at it, they're spending more money with the excuse that they're saving money. But it costs more money to lay off these people. Forget the nature of the programs. Forget the benefit to the people. Forget the social wage that's being cut that people depend on. Just actual dollars. They're spending more than $150 billion to get rid of these programs than the $150 they claimed that they would be saving.
Jake, we should not forget that it's about perception, of what they're doing.
That's right.
That they are selling to the base the perception that everything that they're doing is working and that everything they're doing is necessary and everything they're doing is making America great again.
Although, you're making a good point. They're selling it to the base because the truth is the latest polls out this week show that Trump, the support for Trump and the support for what Trump is doing has been reduced from what it was when he was elected down to about what the strength of his base is. The independents oppose it. The Democrats oppose it. The only people who support what he's doing is his base, his hardcore base. And that hardcore base is in the 30%.
Yeah. He's lost even some of those.
He may have lost some of those, but even if he held on to that, that's 70% of the American people who don't want this, who oppose this, who think it's wrong and bad, and who think also, they're being affected by it. They're being pauperized by it. But what they think is that they're in the minority, whereas in fact, they're 2-1 in the majority. And that is the role of political leadership, to make these people realize we're the majority. We shouldn't let the minority get away with this. We got to stop them, and we can't stop them. There's more of us, 2-1.
Yeah, I was reading an article this week about minority rule and how this, the founders were good at figuring out how to stop the tyranny of the majority from taking away individual rights. What they didn't do well or contemplate was tyranny of the minority. And that's what the Trumpers, the Project 2025ers have figured out, is how to impose a tyranny of the minority. And again, this goes back.
And they're very open about it, right?
Yeah, this goes back. Yeah, that was the thing. They were originally working behind the scenes. Now everything is out in the open, or most of it's out in the open.
Right.
This goes back to Nancy McLean.
Right.
That's one of the theses of her book, Democracy in Chains, that the Koch brothers, after David Koch lost the 1980 election for vice president, realized that their ideas just could never get elected. So they try to figure out a way to impose their minority view, this uber libertarian view, on the rest of us. And these things have come out since then, the Heritage Foundation, Federalist Society, and Ruth Ben-Ghiat this week had a professor from Penn on, and it's merged. These groups have merged into the Christian nationalist movement, the white supremacy movement. All of these are working together on this stuff, and that's where we're in the state we're in for these 100 days. Someone was commenting this week, well, we've only got 1,300 and some days to go.
But think about the actual, if Trump and the Trumpniks thought that they would actually achieve something, well, they have disrupted the government. There's no doubt about it. They've disrupted the programs that were so hard to enact and cost so much effort in the 20th century to create. They got rid of that fairly quickly. They've got rid of all of them. But on the other hand, they haven't done anything for themselves. They voluntarily wiped out the basis of their economy. They seem to think that it's useful to go to war with all of the allies that they dominated over the last 50, 60, 70 years. I can't quite understand why it's good to be an enemy of the Germans and the French and the British. Why the American business people think that's a good idea. But that's where they are. They've managed to produce a wreckage of their own capitalist economy. Why is that good idea? I mean, to me, that's a defeat from their own point of view.
Well, it's because these other places have not yet been taken over by MAGA. And as a result, they are examples to the American people of what normal is. And they want to wipe that out. I mean, that's why Elon Musk is over there supporting the neo-fascist political party in Germany, for instance. It's why they're enthralled with Viktor Orban.
They want to organize a fascist international. I understand that, and I agree with you that is what they're doing in the name of American exceptionalism and American leadership and America firstism. But the thing about the local fascists in Germany or in France, the French fascists want French exceptionalism. The German fascists want German exceptionalism. You know, when the Nazis and the Italians and fascists got together, it was clear that Mussolini, despite the fact they didn't like it, had to be subservient to the Germans. But he didn't like it. These people can't get along. These are not groups that get along.
Well, the irony, of course, was that Mussolini was the first fascist. Hitler learned from him.
Right.
But that Germany was a country than Italy did, more competent.
It was industrialized, whereas Italy wasn't industrialized.
Right.
They didn't have the strength. They couldn't beat the Ethiopians, the Italians.
Yeah, I was just going to say that. it was difficult. But they're trying to organize this world, like we said, a world view of MAGA, and it's just not going that well. There are parts of it that where the normal politics are weak, and they're able to score some victories, but they've never gotten to the point where they're the majority in Germany or in France or what have you. France last year rejected that when Le Pen started increasing her position in the polls, and look what happened in Canada. The election's coming up pretty soon.
Yeah, Monday.
That was going to be a great conservative victory, getting rid of the Trudeau regime and whatever. And now that may not happen. They've brought the liberals back into the ballgame, in essence, as a reaction to the United States, what Trump is doing.
But still, we have in the United States the task of mobilizing the majority of the people who oppose the Trump program so that they are effective and so they are not demoralized.
Yeah, well, in that regard, we were talking beforehand, the DNC, the new chair, has come up with this great idea called the 50-state strategy.
Oh, a new idea.
Yeah, we've only been talking about that since the beginning of our show, right?
Right, exactly.
What Howard Dean did in 2006 and 2008,
right,
to get control and get Barack Obama elected. And if you remember, at one point, the Democrats had 60 senators until Ted Kennedy's brain tumor took him out. And then the powers that be in the Democratic Party threw that all away. They decided to become top-down again.
And Obama, who had a nationwide organization, dissolved it as soon as he got elected.
Yeah. We're just going to run everything out of the White House.
Yeah.
There have been some mini version of it in Pennsylvania. John Fetterman said he was going to run in every county and every vote.
Yeah, He
didn't have the great organization, yeah. But he was able, through imaging, to pick up votes in those highly Republican rural counties, and enough of it to get himself elected. But it is the most effective strategy. You've got to fight everywhere and put the enemy, so to speak, on defense rather than offense.
Well, in Scranton, you certainly have an outpost of where this has to be done, because the Republicans have targeted Scranton to become a Republican county. And as I understand it, Lackawanna County is the only Democratic-controlled county north of U.S. 80.
Yeah, the only one with a Democratic registration
advantage.
And it's been shrinking and shrinking and shrinking. And as I told you last week, we went to the Abington Democrats gathering, and County Commissioner Gaughan, who right now doesn't have a partner, pointed out the statistics of where they were headed. The problem being that the county chairman is doing nothing about that. I saw this week the Republicans had a voter registration tent set up right across the street from the county administration building. And the Democrats have nothing going.
Well, the Democrats may not be able to counter the Republicans. It may require some kind of citizen movement outside the Democratic Party, which for electoral purposes might then enter the Democratic Party to run candidates, but which doesn't depend on the Democrats to get organized.
Well, I think the exception to that is the Abington Democrats. And the question is, will other areas of the county grow like or follow the lead of the Abington Dems, or is Chris Patrick going to try to crush it?
And that is really the picture for the whole state, because you don't hear anything about the state party.
No, I get virtually nothing out of the state party there.
All right. Well, we're done with this week.
Yes.
We've come to
another 7 days.
Yeah. He's got another couple of days to his 100th day. We see what kind of havoc he can wreck. Right now, he's in Italy attending the Pope's funeral.
Yes. The
more he's out of the country, probably, the better off the country.
He's probably trying to figure out how could I rig that election.
See you next week.
Lots of luck on that, Don. Okay. See you next week.
You've been listening to Forward with Falk. Longtime Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen discuss politics. Join them again next week, same time, same place.